Welcome to Mentor Texts for Munchkins. I'm Kelly, an early literacy specialist who walks the line of pushing the curriculum just outside the box. I'm a mom of five and a lifelong children's book fan. This podcast shares ways to inspire young readers and writers through the pages of great picture books. Listen to inspirational biographies of the writers behind some of the very books we have on our shelves. Get mini lesson ideas as we talk shop and discuss outside-the-box learning for home and the classroom. We make books, authors, and literacy strategies real. We are bringing joy back into our classrooms. Whether you're here for inspiration, mini lesson ideas, or to fall in love with some of your favorite children's books all over again, welcome to the community. Hi, and welcome to episode 4 of the Mentor Texts for Munchkins podcast. I'm very excited today to share with you the story behind The Big Orange Spot. But I have two stories to share with you today, which makes it even more exciting. I'm excited to share the actual inspiration behind The Big Orange Spot, but then I have this great side note where I also get to share with you how I found out the story behind The Big Orange Spot, because both of them are pretty dear to my heart. So if you're not familiar, The Big Orange Spot is a fiction picture book, and it's written by Daniel Manus Pinkwater, who's a really, really fun author to research and let your kids know. His pictures are whimsical. His photos that he uses for his own headshots are a lot of fun. And he just is one of those characters who could be a character in a book because he's so full of humor and life and interesting isms. And he plays with language so many different ways, both in his work for kids and his work for adults as well. But The Big Orange Spot, to give you an idea of the story, it takes place on a neat street. So the main character, Mr. Plumbean, lives on this really neat street where all the houses look exactly the same. And everyone in the neighborhood is like, oh, this is such a neat street. We love our neat street. So it immediately gives you the idea of kind of like condo associations or those new housing developments where everything is pretty much planned out, where the park will be, and a beautiful place, but where there's really no identity. And then one day, a seagull, for whatever reason, carrying a paint can, flies over Mr. Plumbean's house and drops a big spot of orange paint, here we go with the title power, on Mr. Plumbean's house. And his neighbors are not concerned because they're sure that right away Mr. Plumbean is going to fix it and clean it up and they'll go back to being a neat street. But there's this moment in the book where Mr. Plumbean comes out and he kind of stares at it for a little bit and he goes back in his house and he doesn't do anything. And the neighbors awake to find later on that he's now taken the big orange spot and modified his house all around it and painted all these different parts of his house and added an alligator to the front lawn and a hammock. And he changes the whole house to be whimsical and represent all his dreams. And his neighbors are completely outraged. They think he's gone completely nuts and they try talking to him. But he keeps saying that my house is me and I am it and that this is the house of his dreams that represents all the things that he dreams and loves. So the neighbors are completely outraged and put together a plan to make him go back and fix his house because they want their street to be neat again. So they send over one of the neighbors to talk to him. And the neighbor's gone for a very long time and he leaves and you don't see in the book what that conversation is. But the next day he decides to decorate his house to look like the house of his dreams and he changes the shape and formats his house so it represents everything he's ever dreamed before. And the same thing, another neighbor would go over and the same thing would happen. So by the end of this story, you have this really great shot at the end of all these houses that now all look completely different from each other. And there's so much work you can do with inferencing on these last pages. You can sit there and do the very literal interpretation of looking closely at the features that are on the house, which is great for young children, having them infer what the dreams may be as far as like physical features, like is it a boat, is it a hot air balloon? But for older students, you can freeze at these last pages and have them inference what could be the even deeper meaning? Is this someone who wants to travel? Is this someone who wants to leave everything behind? Is this someone who's scared of heights? What does this tell us about the person living in this house? So there's a lot of fun ways to stop and think at the end of the book. And it's also a great book to read over and over again for so many different reasons, because you can even do comparisons. For those teachers who are working with Pearson's strategies and you're working to bring those strategies more into actual picture books, this is a great place to do compare and contrast, because you can compare what the street looked like in the beginning of the book and the end, and even what were the neighbors like in the beginning and at the end. There's a lot of room for comprehension in this book in a really fun, engaging story that has so many rich details and interesting parts. From the minute it starts, kids will want to hear it over and over again. The words are interesting. The language is poetic. There's so many fun, fantastical elements. But all the while, it has that feeling to it. Like, you know what? Yeah, I don't even think a seagull can carry a paint can. But what if this could really happen? Because it has just enough realism to put you in that place where you say, well, it could. It could happen. So I've used this book for the first days of school when we were doing responsive classroom. I used it to launch Hopes and Dreams. We literally went into the block center and built homes that looked like our dreams that we had. So if they wanted to travel, if they wanted to be a fireman, if they wanted to be a family one day, they got to do that in the block center and with the art materials. But I've also used it with older students for introducing Martin Luther King Jr.'s work. And what does that feel like when things are changed, when people who are different come in, when different ideas are introduced, and how at first people can be very scared of different and think different is scary. But once they get to know people more and talk more and have conversation, how it can lead to a lot of great changes and make everyone even happier. So we've used it to link into social studies and history. But there's just so many different ways to use this story, from a retelling to character traits to inferencing. It's a really rich book, and it's one of those books I constantly keep in my coaching bag because I can use it for a number of mini lessons. Now, again, I don't know how I came across this book, but I'm super thankful I have. And it was a little difficult for me at first to find information about why this book was written. So if you listen to episode one, which is the one that features me being yelled at by a famous children's book author, by the way, I also tell you a little more in detail why I research the stories that I bring into my classroom. And it's because it's a quick opportunity to teach kids how writers get ideas, because there's so many interesting stories behind the books that we're sharing with them, so that they can start to see how they can get ideas as a writer too, and how it's not always just sitting down at a table saying, I'm going to write something today. And it's not always from a prompt, that there's a lot of ways that writers get ideas. And it also helps us get even more information from the book, because a lot of the times when we know the story behind the story, we reread it with a different lens. So the first time I read The Big Orange Spot, I used it more for just listening to the story. The second time we connected to it and talked about our hopes and dreams. And then around the third read, I decided that I wanted to introduce how Daniel Manus Pinkwater came up with the idea for the story. So I started researching it and I couldn't really find anything. And I was getting frustrated. So I took a shot, and Daniel Manus Pinkwater has a webpage that's filled with all these great comments from all his different audiences, because he's written from everywhere from the little kid level all the way up to chapter books and even for adults. And he had, surprisingly, which I didn't know, a radio show for years on NPR where he actually reviewed books and had commentaries too. So he's led a very interesting life. And there was this box where you could contact him. So I was like, you know what? I'll give it a shot. I'll send an email. So I sent an email and just explained how much I love using the book with my class and that I wanted to take it to the next level and use it for how writers get ideas, but I really couldn't find anything about it. Well, I almost fell over because 2 hours later, I had a response, and it was from him personally. It wasn't from an agent. It wasn't from a publisher. And you would have like thought the president contacted me. That's how excited I was. And I was telling my husband, jumping up and down. I'm like, Daniel Manus Pinkwater wrote me a response email. It was super exciting. And I have to tell you, that email changed my instruction for the better in a big, big way, which I'll share with you a little more in this episode. It was probably one of the most important emails I ever received, and I'm so grateful for it, and I will share with you what was in it. But as for the inspiration for the big orange spot, he explained to me that he was living in a home where he wasn't allowed to make any changes in the home. And he was looking outside one day out the window at how all the houses looked the same. And he said to himself, well, I may not be able to change this house, but what if? What if I could change it? What would happen? What would I want it to look like? And that was the idea for the big orange spot and his inspiration. It came from his own wishes and his own desires to change and not live on such a neat street, and bring his dreams and have his house represent who he was. Because in his eyes, you're living in this home. Why wouldn't you want it to be somewhere that represents who you are? So this changed my whole viewpoint on the book, because then I ran and I got the book and I stared at the cover, and then I went and Googled the picture of Daniel Manus Pinkwater and I put it side by side, and I have this on the website in our show notes at www.mentortextformunchkins.com. And on the cover, there's a man looking out the window, and it looks a lot like Daniel Manus Pinkwater. So my kindergartners were so excited. I didn't tell them flat out. I showed them a picture of him. I explained the backstory. And then we revisited the book again and paused at the cover. And instantly, a group of them made that connection. They were so excited. They're like, he's Mr. Plumbean. That's him. It looks just like him. And I thought it was so amazing that right on the cover of this book, you have this moment where the real author had that moment that inspired the book. The cover is him looking out the window, and this is where the story came from. It's a really cool thing to share with kids, and they really get into it too. So in his email, he went on a little bit more about how he came up with the idea. And I just want to share with you his words exactly, because they're so inspiring. And it was such a really thoughtful and warm response, and I appreciate it. So Mr. Pinkwater says, this is what inspired me to write The Big Orange Spot. I lived it. Well, I did not paint my house in a very unusual way. Just as well, since it was a rented house, and the owner might not have liked all the artwork. But I did live at one time on a neat street, and by that I mean boring. I was standing and looking out the window at the houses all the same, and I thought the thought that gives rise to all works of fiction. What if, I thought, what if one of these houses had all kinds of crazy paintings on it? So instead of actually painting the house I lived in and getting in trouble with the landlord, I wrote the story and drew the pictures. By the way, this is what art of all kinds does for us. It allows us to experience things as they might be, in addition to how they are. So I read that, and my eyes kept going back to what if, what if, what if. And then later, a few months later, I had the pleasure of meeting Jane Yolen at the Children's Book Festival near where I live. And she had handed out a resource to use for writing. And she talked about the idea of what if. And I said, how is it possible that I've loved writing my whole life? I've done all types of fiction writing. I've coached on writing. I've taught writing. And I've never heard it simplified, that brainstorming process, down to two simple words. What if? So I took that idea, put it in my pocket, wrote it out on a card, and kept it in my coaching bag. And this year, I was working with a lot of second grade classrooms who were creating their animal fiction stories. And that was the genre that they were working in, how you can use personification and how you can come up with a plot. And I decided to do something differently this year when I was working with teachers. And I start out with, what if we give them two simple words before we start this journey? And what if we teach them the Pinkwater strategy, the Jane Yolen strategy, and just say, what if? So when we're brainstorming how we can create a character from an animal, well, what if a cheetah wasn't fast? Or what if a giraffe was really clumsy? Or what if my cat really could talk to me? And teach them that it's such a different thinking than personal narrative. Personal narrative is more of looking back at a memory that did happen, right? And all abouts are teaching someone exactly how something is, and how to is teaching exactly how it happens. But what if activates that like really cool curious daydreaming part of the brain that I believe all kids have. So although not every child can be comfortable writing fiction or may be comfortable writing fiction, what a great starting place, because I'm pretty sure at any point a kid said what if to themselves. So we brought this in from the very early stages of our fiction unit, and oh my goodness, the stories they came up with. It was beautiful. We went from character traits, what if you had characters who could do this, to developing what would be their juicy part, their climax of their story, what if this happened to your animal. And these two simple words were so excellent at bringing out that fiction thinking and keeping it focused and keeping it close to your heart too, and something that you're really interested in. And I think that this is something that Daniel Manus Pinkwater has mastered. So he's had some critics say in the past that his plots are all over the place and they're really fantastical, but there's a certain beauty to what he does over and over in his work. He has a tendency to take a realistic setting, such as a backyard or a restaurant or the street that he lives on, and keep a lot of the characters the same that would be in that setting. But then he always just gives this little nudge, this little bit of absurdity of like, whoa, where did this come from? And why did this happen? So for instance, he has a story where a blue moose shows up at a restaurant and wants to cook. He has a story where a little boy is playing out in his backyard and he's taken by aliens and is now drinking root beer floats, but is home in time for dinner. And he also has a story about a gigantic chicken running around Hoboken, New Jersey, which I love because the Jersey girl inside of me can really relate to that. And it turns out when I researched it even more, beyond just his email, he is shaped a lot by the settings he had as a child, because he moved a lot between cities as a child. And he always had a special place in his heart for Chicago. So he said that a lot of his settings are based on Chicago and things from his memory of being a child in Chicago, because it was so, so dear to his heart. But how he takes that and then makes an element of fantasy into a lot of these settings. So his books are a lot of fun to read, and it's something that we can take back to our classes too, who are maybe they're struggling with fiction. They think everything has to be fake, and it doesn't. It doesn't. You can have them look at a setting that's dear to their heart. They can look at their own home, their bedroom, their school, and then see, well, how can I tweak this and make it a little bit fiction? What if this happened? What if this person showed up? And it's a really, really great, meaningful way to start fiction, because fiction can be silly, but we also want it to be focused and make you feel something. And I feel like Daniel Manus Pinkwater has that really nice balance between there too. So I was really excited to have an email from him, and I'm so appreciative not only for the story behind the big orange spot, but also that prompt that I can take with me that really inspires fiction. And when I say prompt, I don't mean prompt like let's print it out and every single kid has to answer what if, but that natural thought process that prompts the creation of fiction. And if you're working with older students or any student really, you can also use that what if as a source of power, right? So maybe you can't change something right now, but what if you could? And you can experience it. And that is what makes writing so beautiful, because maybe you don't like everything about your current situation, or maybe you wish you could go back to something. And in writing, you can. You can have a neighbor move back on your street. You can have the pet you always wanted. You could be really good at a sport or have a superpower that you wish you always had. It's a really empowering genre to let children explore, not just as readers, but also as writers too. So this is a book that you could then revisit for various things. So as I said, you could use it for community building in the beginning of the year. You can use it for talking about the importance of differences and how differences make us special. And you can also look at it as, where's the fiction writer inside of you? What if you could change something? What if you had something unique happen to you? And we can bring that into our own workshop model for not just reading, but for writing as well too. So stay with us for a moment. We'll be back and we'll talk about some of the mini lessons that can be supported and inspired by this text. So as always, you can download the free principal mini lesson resource from the Mentor Text for Munchkins Teachers Pay Teachers store. And you can also access the show notes that has a link to the free printable resource as well. If you haven't had a chance yet, I offer through my Mentor Text for Munchkins store on Teachers Pay Teachers a free download for a binder to organize your mentor text by different topics or strategies or things that you like to do, as well as a cheat sheet with all the mini lessons that you can teach with it. I don't want to say all the mini lessons because there's always more you're going to find, but how about a good start? A good chunk of mini lessons that you can use with this text as well as other ones that are there. So be sure to check that out. So we'll be back in a moment with some of the reading workshop mini lessons and writing workshop mini lessons that you can use to bring this great book into your readers and writers' hands. Thank you. Can't take notes while driving or running? No worries. The Mentor Text for Munchkins community has you covered. Join the free Mentor Text for Munchkins community at www.mentortextformunchkins.com. Members of the community have access to a free Mentor Text resource organizer, free Mentor Text cheat sheets for each episode that include author biographies, think aloud tips, and mini lesson ideas for reading and writing workshop. As a member, you also gain access to community exclusive giveaways. Did I mention membership is free? Educators need a little more free in our lives. Be sure to join the community at www.mentortextformunchkins.com. Our community mission? Let's share with kids that reading and writing are not just things they do, but a part of who they are. If we're having fun teaching, they're going to have a blast learning. Welcome back for part two of the Big Orange Spot podcast, episode number four. In this part of the episode, we're going to take a look at some of the mini lessons that you can do for reading workshop and writing workshop, as well as intentional read aloud with this great mentor text. So the Big Orange Spot is a fiction genre mentor text, but you can use it for a variety of strategies that work well with different genres as well too. So just one of the things to keep in mind that you may want to grab a pen and paper and jot this down, but you can also download again for free the mini lesson teaching points in a resource cheat sheet at the Teachers Pay Teachers store for Mentor Text for Munchkins, as well as in the show notes on the website www.mentortextformunchkins.com. So just some of the teaching points that you can bring in for a mini lesson here for reading workshop. A lot of them are going to be based on looking at characters. So there you're here that some of these are more complex and can be used for the older readers or on the higher end of the continuum, where some can be used with even preschoolers and kindergartners. So first, readers create theories about characters based on character actions, dialogue, and how others react to the character. So you can talk about how Mr. Plumbeam's neighbors felt about him in the beginning, what were his actions like, and how was he in the beginning, what changes, do his actions change, does the things that he says change, the things that he thinks, and how do others react to that, to develop theories about him as a character. So it never says flat out that Mr. Plumbeam had this realization that, you know, the same one that Daniel Pinkwater had and said, I'm going to change all this. But there's a lot of inferencing about that. So this is a great book to go back and say, where did the character change? How do we know that the character changed? And how did others react to that, to the character's changes? And this helps develop that idea of looking closely and creating theories as you read. Readers have wonderings about their reading. Hello, why is there a seagull with a big giant paint can? That might be one of the most fun beginnings of all time in a story. So you can have a lot of fun having kids jot down their wonderings about the book. You can have them start to answer those wonderings by using inferencing and some of the evidence from their text. And imagine what a great partner conversation you can have about why a seagull has a can of paint. That lends itself to a whole nother set of fiction writing. What if the seagull was off to go paint his own home? Or what if he stole it from a construction site? I don't know. There's a lot of fun possibilities with that one too. It makes for a great turn and talk for reading though. And how they can answer these questions. They can use their imagination. They can use clues from the book. They can use their background knowledge to create some answers for themselves, even if we don't know exactly the real answer going through it. This is also a great book for how readers use sensory details to create a movie in their mind. So how there's all these different details that talk about the colors and images and sequencing through, and how you always want to keep that movie moving in your mind. This is an especially important teaching point for early readers because a lot of kids feel that they don't have to make a movie in their mind because the pictures are there. So you'll find a lot of picture book readers don't really get strong retellings because they're not looking at it as a sequenced movie when they're reading. They're looking at it more as a series of events and not making it flow all together. So one of the most powerful lessons I've used with first graders is how to stop and make the pages move. How a page in a picture book is a snapshot. It's not the whole movie. It's just a frozen frame of it. So we talk about how there's parts in books where the characters are performing actions and saying things, but when we look at the picture, we don't see exactly that. It's only one part of it that we see. So it's always nice to have them slow down and say, what do we have to fill in? What's not in the pictures? Or how do we make the pictures move? How do we picture the seagull flapping its wings? How do we picture the paint can tipping over and the paint pouring out on the roof? It seems like something children would do innately, but a lot of the times they don't. So if you have children who are struggling with retelling, it's especially helpful to have them back up and really see how they can slow down, make those pictures move, and fill in the gaps by using their imagination and parts of the book. Another great teaching point is how readers use their background knowledge to put on a character's shoes and think about how the character may feel or think during events in the story. There's a lot of parts in the book where you can stop and think about how Mr. Plumbean feels or how a neighbor feels. And this brings in connections. In order to do that work, you have to have some sort of background knowledge that you're pulling from or a memory of a time you felt that way. So it's an interesting conversation to have as well too. Readers can learn a lesson from a character by looking at how a character changes because that's usually a significant event that tells us the character learned something. So we know when characters change, most of the time it's for the better. And what did the character learn and what does that teach us? So books have lessons on several levels. There's the lesson that the character's learning, and then there's the lesson that the writer wants us to take away. And this is a really great one, especially if you're tying it into how we treat others and building classroom culture and valuing differences of opinions and perspective. Readers retell a story in sequence and include character problems or wishes. So this kind of hits both, right? There's a problem in this story. He has a big splot on his house, but there's this underlying thing too where he has wishes that he wants to have come true. So this is a great one to talk about how most of the story is about the juicy part. We don't talk a lot about the seagull, even though you could be completely intrigued by the seagull with the paint can. And we don't talk a lot about each neighbor moving to the street and how they wound up there. But Daniel Pinkwater spends a lot of time on the juicy part because that's the heart of the story and how we look at the character's problems and wishes and how that's resolved in a story, which leads us into how readers stretch the heart of a story when they're retelling, that's where you should spend most of the time talking about because that's where the focus of the story is. So the bookmark this spot for this book, just as a suggestion, you may find others, is to go into the part where the neighbor goes over to visit Mr. Plumbean, the first neighbor, and he's going over there on a mission. He's going to be the one that turns it all around, and we all know somebody like that who wants to be the one that gets everything back on track to the way they think it should be. And there's this great excerpt. It says, "The man went to see Mr. Plumbean that evening. They sat under the palm trees talking and drinking lemonade all night long." And then the next day, the man wakes up and paints his house to look like a ship. So there's no fill in the blanks there. It doesn't say what was said. It doesn't say what their conversation was. So this is a great example for students of how we have to infer and we have to fill in the gaps. We don't, and draw conclusions. We can't just look at it and say, all right, let's keep reading. Who cares what they said? There's clearly something that happened in this part. So you can have students turn and talk about what they think was said, but you can also have them role play. If you have some actors in your class, or like the kids who have big personalities, or even someone shy, this could hit for all students. Have them model what that conversation could be like. Maybe one of them is Mr. Plumbean, partner A, and partner B is the neighbor, and they have this mock conversation. What do you think took place that made this man decide to not only leave Mr. Plumbean alone, but he's going to join him? He was convinced, and now he wants to create a house of his dreams. So this is a really, really fun one. You could even write out the dialogue as a class of what it could be, some of the things that were said in this conversation, and bring in some of the mechanics of how writers show who's talking as you do a shared writing piece about the dialogue that could have taken place in this conversation. It's a really fun spot. Now, you could also, of course, talk about the seagull carrying a paint can, because that's just going to come up. Kids are going to want to talk about that from the beginning. Now, for writing workshop, as we mentioned in the beginning of this podcast episode, that the idea of what if is at the heart of brainstorming fiction ideas, and how it's very empowering because it allows us to live in a world where our wishes are possible. So you can bring that language, and you can even say, this was one of Mr. Pinkwater's wishes. It was impossible, but guess what? He wrote a book and made it possible. And because he wrote it, he got to experience it, because writers get to experience their stories. So what's something you want to experience? What's something you want to happen? And how this can help you live out your dreams. Writers use dialogue to reveal character traits and feelings. There's a lot of parts in the book where the neighbors are talking to each other, and their dialogue is very indicative of how they feel and what they're thinking, and also with him, it has a lot of tone in it. So this is a great book to talk about how dialogue is a really powerful way to show and not just tell. Writers use juicy words to really paint a picture in a reader's mind. So there's this great language, such as, especially when the neighbors are like really getting upset. So they say, he's gushed his mush, he's popped his cork. They could have just said, the neighbors thought he was crazy. But instead, they use these really fun phrases to describe it. So they're fun to break down and say, you know, what's another way? Instead of saying someone was mad, or instead of saying someone was making someone nervous, what are some more interesting ways you can play with language and expand on that? And you can even make a chart where you expand on an emotion or a feeling together and talk about different creative ways you can expand that to make it more interesting to read. Writers can close a story by reflecting on a lesson, feeling, change, or purpose. So this story didn't end with, and then they went home, and then the neighbors went to bed. But a lot of your stories in your class may seem that way, because it's probably the most popular endings besides the classic, the end. So talk about how it ends. Talk about how there's this reflective piece, looking back on the change and talking a little bit about the change and how it makes people feel. Because I always tell my students, I say, you want to start with an ending in mind when you're writing. It's a map. You wouldn't just go outside and start driving around and then say, oh, we'll see where I end up. And the same thing with writing. You may change your ending. You may come up with other ideas for your ending. But it's nice to have an idea of where your story is going, so that you can really be in it and feel it and follow it all the way through. And that, don't leave your moment. Don't leave your story. It's when in doubt, end with a feeling, end with thinking, or reflect on the change that took place in your story. Writers plot their stories and spend the most time sharing the heart of their story. So again, if you're going to do a page count about how many pages in the beginning are introducing characters and setting, how many are focused on this problem of the house changing and this street not being neat anymore, and how many are spent on what happened afterwards. It gives you a good perspective of how to pace out your story. If you have the writing or reading strategies book by Jennifer Saravallo, one of my, and I'm going to do a future podcast episode on it because this piece has been so helpful with all grades that I work with for reading and for writing. There's this great model she uses called Plot Mountain, and it literally shows how stories work in an upwards model in the beginning or at the bottom of the mountain. You're introducing characters, you're introducing the setting, and then it's a small part. And then you start moving up the mountain, giving hints of a problem. And then at the top of the mountain, there's this giant problem or this giant event or this big thing happens. And then the problem's either resolved or a change takes place of some sort. And you come back down the mountain and it's how everyone's affected afterwards. And that's a very short trip down. And we talk about how most of the time is spent climbing and sitting on that mountain when we're writing a story, as well as when we're retelling it. It's a great visual if you have a chance. In the reading strategies book, it's under plot and comprehension. And in the writing strategies book, it's under the structure of stories and organizing it. And then writers can write about what they know and add fantastical elements to it in fiction. So you can talk about, you know, maybe you're having a hard time using all these different fiction aspects. So maybe only make a little bit of your story fictionalized. What fantasy would you add into something that's real and change? Writers can use similes and metaphors to create strong pictures in a reader's mind. So they describe Mr. Plumbean's house in the book as his house was like a rainbow. It was like a jungle. It was like an explosion. And that's in reference to all the colors, all the things going on his house. But they don't just say, Mr. Pinkwater doesn't just say Mr. Plumbean's house was colorful. That's telling. He shows it. It was like a rainbow. It was like a jungle. It was like an explosion. And how that really rich language. And that's something that kids can go back into their own writing and change around. Color is a fun one to work with because color is an easy place for kids to start and to connect into deeper levels. So if you want kids to become a little stronger in how they describe things, if you start with color and feelings, that's a great place to do some work with playing around with language. And writers can add fictional characters to real settings. So who's somebody you wish would show up? Or maybe you want to be in your book, but you want to meet somebody interesting. These are all lessons that we can take from Mr. Pinkwater. So again, you can bookmark this for your intentional read aloud or using this for a writing mini lesson, but there's a lot of places that you can bookmark in this book. But one of my favorites, it takes place in paragraph 15 through 18, and it's the initial description of Mr. Plumbean decorating his house. And this is the bookmark this suggestion for this text because it demonstrates how details such as color and number really help readers visualize our writing. And he goes on to really describe, like, you could close your eyes and picture it even without the illustration. That's how strong the language is there. So again, how you can take a moment and really stretch it out by using color, number, and those details to help paint a picture in your reader's mind. So even if you have them go back and pick a part in their story where they want to really describe what something looks like, it's a good mini lesson spot for that. So I just want to close with something that I read that Mr. Pinkwater had said in a Scott Forsman reading series article, actually. And he was reflecting on his role as a writer. And he said, I think children's books are the most important thing you can do because these are the people who are learning about reading. And I'm like, oh, can you love him anymore? Because he gets it. He gets it. Like, you kind of the same philosophy as Dr. Seuss. Like, you want to create books that kids are going to want to read, that kids are going to want to come back to. I say it over and over again when we're talking about book shopping and how to pick books. Interest trumps all. Interest and curiosity trumps all. So he's really made it his mission to create the kind of books that kids would want to read. And I think that's really special. And reflecting on our role, we're doing important work too, because we have an opportunity every day to teach those kids. It's an important thing to do because we're teaching them to learn about reading. We're teaching them to learn about writing, but we also want them to love it. So, you know, there's that difference between walking around the class and saying, read, are your eyes in your book? Read, you have to read. And looking at your class and seeing kids who are engrossed in their books, who are walking to the bookshelf, still reading their book as they go to put it back in their book bag, or who are having a hard time pulling themselves out of their story because they got to a part that they were so excited to get to that day in writing workshop. It's really magic, and I feel like we're very lucky people to get to see and experience that. So if you're at the beginning stages of your reading and writing workshop, don't feel discouraged if you're not seeing that yet, because you may have kids who aren't putting their heads in the book or really into writing, and it may just be that they haven't learned the tools yet or they haven't found that connection yet. But that's why you're there, because you're there to show them the diverse ways that writers get ideas and the diverse books that are out there that they could connect to. But what makes the Big Orange Spot pretty special is I feel like there's a little piece of everybody in this book and a little something everyone could take away. So as you're continuing your day, maybe take a moment and think, what would your house of your dreams look like? What would you do if you were Mr. Plumbing? Because I'm fairly confident my house would involve something that looks like the Swiss Family Treehouse from Disney World, because I have to take a trip through there every time we go, because it's kind of my dream to live up there with a whole bunch of jungle animals and climb on tree branches all day and live off the land. Again, it could happen. What if? You never know. So thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to share a review on wherever you listen to this today on your platform so that others can find it and use it as well. And be sure to check out the show notes and the free resources at the Mentor Text for Munchkins Teachers Pay Teacher Store, as well as the blog www.mentortextformunchkins.com. Thanks always, and thank you for sharing the joy of Mentor Text with your young readers and writers. Be sure to always keep a book by your side and a story in your heart. Thanks. Thank you for listening today. If you like what you heard, will you please take a moment to review this podcast so others can find it? Hey, you can double dip and use your review as an example of persuasive and opinion writing for your students. Have an idea for a future episode? Stop by the website, www.mentortextformunchkins.com, and send us an email with your thoughts. Until next time, remember, always keep a book by your side and a story in your heart.